Remembering the Future, The Physics of the Soul and Time Travel, Chapter 6, Tapping at the Right Time. Memories, quantum foam of intention from which roars the present for one fleeting moment. Reminisced, lamented, treasured, notes in a symphony called creation. In this chapter, I'm going to teach you the Phoenix Sequence, first discovered by Maureen St. Germain in her 1998 book, You Are the Genie in the Bottle. The discovery of the mathematical process by which human intention can be applied to create a resonant increase of power is the secret. This is the process by which the law of attraction works. I mean, it actually functions like a formula that cannot fail. Nikola Tesla discovered that a tiny amount of energy applied at exactly the right moment can not only overcome the inertia, that is, the resistance to movement of bridges and buildings, it can move life energy as well. We have been building a foundation of knowledge and experience so that you will understand the process I am about to explain to you. It is simple, and in that simplicity, it is genius. Are you ready to learn why and how the law of attraction really works? Okay, here we go. Humans are sophisticated and cunning. They are self-preserving at all costs and nearly always react to their surroundings rather than change their surroundings to suit their desires. How do you think an animal with slow muscles, no body hair to speak of, poor hearing, no night vision, and no claws of any kind could survive on a harsh planet like Earth? Human beings are defined as those humans who are in some stage of awareness that he or she has existed before and will exist long after this life. Many traditions teach of this, and many do teach the concept of pre-Earth lives. Yet this early life is believed to be in the form of a spirit without physical form, as if we came from some sort of guff, also gup or guff, the well of souls, where all spirits await their one shot at mortality to add to the processing of their intelligence from some sort of God-thought embryo into a full-fledged God with all power and knowledge. This is nearly completely and almost certainly utter nonsense. You most certainly have existed for eons. In fact, you have existed from the beginning with Source. You may be one of the old ones who can recall more clearly your experience and wisdom. You may be one of the young ones who have barely the memory of being born in this lifetime. There are those who would claim that your awareness of your experiences on other worlds and faraway lifetimes has no bearing on your life here, even if it was true. Nothing could be further from the truth. Your presence here, along with the other billions of sentient souls here, is exactly the point. It wasn't random. It was by choice. Your choice. Don't think for one moment beyond this sentence that your choice to come here, either freshly in this lifetime or in many lifetimes here, is without purpose or importance. You are part of a live and conscious population of sentient beings that is here precisely because this rare and beautiful planet is about to go through a metamorphosis, an evolution, to which your specific frequency adds to the vibration of this event. Watching this event from the other side of the universe would hardly be the spot to observe this amazing event. There are stars visible from Earth. Around these stars there are planets. Some of those planets are capable of supporting human life on the surface, but not many. And of those planets, not one near a visible star is at the stage in evolution that this one currently enjoys. You came here to stop her death by the locust mentality. You came here to lift her and join her in this change. And through doing so, you too will evolve in a mighty leap. That's exactly why you were born here, and exactly why so many races are traveling here from other worlds. They want what you have by birth, a chance to experience the live birth of a new world. This embryo Earth needs eternal souls to accompany her through the veil of dimensions. You are among the only ones who are capable of doing that. In fact, some of you have done it before, on other worlds. That is why you feel so out of place here. That is why you do not seek wealth and material goods, but rather seek love and to drift and lift others to a state of love. There are those in your time who speak of these great changes with a fearful message. You will be destitute, they whine. There is no time to follow love. The time is to prepare for poverty and devastation, they scream, as they offer their workshops and shelters and irrevocable words of God. I am not saying these times will be like anything you have ever seen in your mortality here on Earth. I am not saying there won't be systemic upset, cataclysms, and perhaps even economic meltdown. I am saying, when you're awake and cognizant of who you really are, that it won't matter. I'm saying that wealth and estates and fine furniture and gold will be meaningless to you in the presence of your powerful love for one another. Remaining mortal isn't the purpose of life, my fellow Earth explorers. Being in love, being merciful, and learning everything you can while you are here with a song on your lips and an open hand to others is closer to the message we have been trying to share with you. And when the time comes, and rest assured it will happen exactly when it's supposed to happen, you will add exactly what is needed to the symphony of the Earth's trans-dimensional shift. If you're here reading this book, you just had a feeling that you will go through it with her. You are one of the planetary midwives, as it were. The awakened human being realizes he or she has mortal experiences well beyond the ones from this life. These are not merely déjà vu, or the channeling of some other being's thoughts, or even the coexistent entanglement of your three-dimensional self with another model of your intelligence that exists in another universe, or dimension, or on this earth. There is no God construct around which all of us sit like a huge supercomputer, imaging our many peripheral mortalities through life force modems. The idea that life is for the entertainment of some God, or that it is some kind of punishment for tasting apples, or that we are genetic beasts of burden who became self-aware and got away from our taskmasters, is irrelevant. There is no all-powerful being sitting out there in space that sends people to hell or delivers them to mansions in the sky with scores of virgins to attend to their needs. These stories have been formed by the very governing religions that used their exclusive access to truth as a sledgehammer to crush those who spoke of the intuition they were receiving from the source energy that exists around all of us. The truth is that we judge ourselves, and we condemn ourselves, to our own next life by the vibrations we originate. A sin is nothing more than missing the target. Try again and improve your aim. There is no joy in not being able to hit what you are aiming for. For good or ill, the focus of our energy is ours to wield. The responsibility for those vibrations, the life energy of our soul, is our responsibility and our own responsibility. Again, let us say that it does not matter how we are loved by others. It only matters how we love them, everyone. Each and every one of us is an individual with immense power and glory wrapped up inside. The sovereignty of that knowledge is the greatest key to freedom and creation in the universe. It may be exactly why the universe is expanding at an accelerated rate. But what is the source of existence? Where did you come from? Who are you? Hold on to something. You are about to hear the truth, perhaps for the very first time. Let's pick up things a picosecond after the beginning. Keep in mind that the Big Bang never happened. You and I are speaking of the collective of sentient beings in the universe, are still inside the singularity of the original universe. But your love has created time by speeding it up from the zero of the speed of light. The original source was unaware. It was alone in the void. It was void because the void was not awake, but rather snoozing in bliss. That's simple enough. There was no up or down, no left or right, because there was nothing but blackness everywhere. Or perhaps there was nothing but light everywhere. Either way, there was no horizon, no hill or dale or ripple anywhere. Then an amazing thing happened. Source awakened its attention and realized it was asleep and alone and void. This attention is a most important concept to master. It is the first mark of sentience. The moment an intelligence can say, "I am," is the moment it realizes, "I am is God." Yes. Attention is the act of a being becoming aware that it is observing something. That observation usually begins with one's self. We might look at our own feet a million times as an infant, but the first time we wonder at their shape, color, and texture and movement is an amazing experience. Watch an infant the day he discovers his own feet. Oh, he'll reach for them, all out of control and flailing like some sort of robot controlled by a panel with unmarked buttons. Watching the infant punch all the buttons on the arm and leg control panel as he tries to learn how to capture that lovely five-toed object out there in plain sight is a fascinating exercise. The closer they get to associating their proximity sensors and the calcium-fired biotics that make the arms and legs move, the more excited these babies become. Until, at long last, they capture the ever-elusive foot with one reflexive grasp. Then a very strange thing happens. They nearly stop all movement. The quadriceps and calf muscles relax. The biceps and forearm muscles work together like a rod and reel to pull the foot in for a closer viewing. And then the amazing thing happens. The foot is drawn into the orifice, the mouth, in which are placed the two most amazing biological spectrometers in the universe. The tongue is a nearly perfect atomic force microscope, able to discern very fine details in texture and composition. Upon it are millions of sensors able to perform molecular analysis to a few parts in 1 million. Salty, sweet, bitter, and sour aspects can be assessed in infinite combinations at blinding speed and to absolutely quantitative precision. The addition of the nose brings the most powerful and unmistakable piece of analytical equipment in the universe into play. It is the single most powerful means of identity in existence. Once a molecule has been sensed with the average nose, it is permanently catalogued in the memory of that intelligence. Whatever has been associated with that smell is committed to permanent memory. The infant is now self-aware of the foot. In a few days, he or she will be able to command that foot to its mouth for another examination. Until the brain is satisfied, it knows everything it wants to know about the foot and the method for bringing it to the mouth. Depending on the boredom level reached with this new discovery, and perhaps fueled by the success event of completing the analysis of the foot, the infant will move on to the next item to be examined. Every single item picked up by this infant will be placed directly into the mouth for complete scanning. And within a year or so, the eyes will take over as sole sensor for most objects. Energy in the form of light will take over as the rational form of negotiating one's way around the universe. The mouth and tongue are rarely used for close examination of much more than food or another human body after this point. Perhaps this comes from the hand being slapped away from the mouth by parents, or perhaps it is the result of a bad experience of something being placed into the mouth, something too hot, cold, bitter, or just plain nasty tasting. We'll begin the process of using the eyes and nose for non-descriptive analysis in advance of placing something into the mouth. It is a complex set of lessons that can be part of even more complex cultures and customs involving the palate and available sources of food. But now you have the idea of how amazing the beginning of self-awareness can be. Awareness is the first defining characteristic between a human and a human being. A human may be an amazing and complex animal, with speed and coordination and an undeniably robust drive to procreate and preserve its own life. But it is an animal nonetheless. A human is brutal and violent and ever-consuming of its environment. It hunts and gathers and mates and will kill competitors to any of those activities. It lives on rage and lust and greed and will watch another human starve to death without lifting a finger to teach it how to survive if it thinks for a moment there is not enough to share. It will dig a pit for its neighbor and breathe a sigh of good riddance as the homeless are relocated to the morgue. A human being is the most amazing combination of spiritual and temporal energies in the universe. A human being is the most glorious awareness and is a fascination for all other beings in the universe. The awareness of a being is often called consciousness. When humans exhibit higher consciousness, all other beings in the universe pay close attention. A human being works in harmony with other life forms. It manages resources at all levels. A human being is not only self-aware, it is aware of all other life in its environment. At this point, we can stop calling a human being it and start calling a human being he. This is no disrespect to the female of the species, it is merely for simplicity in writing. If you are a woman receiving this book, please mentally replace the word he with she. A human being realizes that for his life to continue, some other life form must be consumed. On the most basic level, grass or carrots or algae are consumed by simple life forms. Higher and higher the consumption continues as minerals build plants, plants build animals, and animals build animals. A human being is aware of this entire ecology and seeks to maintain the balance between all these things. He is aware of the beauty and design of nature. He sees that bees pollinate the flowers, which give rise to fruit that may sustain his life. So he manages the bees along with his fruit trees. He is aware that fresh water falls from the sky and fills lakes, rivers, and streams, and is the liquid of life. So he manages the lakes and rivers and streams and oceans of the world so that they are not polluted or obstructed or lost to deserts. He may fish from them, but not take all the fish. He may irrigate his garden, but not consume all the water or pollute the river to prevent his neighbor from also watering his garden. And if there is not enough water, then he learns to collect and gather the rain and manage that resource so everyone can have some. He is also aware that he is not the only sentient being in the universe. He can learn to freely communicate with beings from all worlds, times, and even universes. He is sensitive to the desires of others and seeks to make things better for others whenever he can. He plays with the cetaceans with the same joy he would any intelligent species in the universe. He may not even domesticate animals for consumption, because he reveres life so much that he cannot fathom one life ending so another can live. Although the feelings of a cabbage can be argued, he has no compunction for consuming copious quantities of sauerkraut. The microscopic life that feeds more complex life to sustain human life is an acceptable and comfortable component to the equation, and he is ever grateful for the bounty of that arrangement. Now let us get back to the idea of attention. The awakened human being realizes he has mortal experiences well beyond the present one. There is wisdom in not living in the past, but a working knowledge of these lives may clear patterns of behavior that enable the being to reach immortality. We need to be very clear that the rules of observation always apply. The observation effect is an advanced process of awareness. The observation of past events will change them. The past is an infinite asymptotic tube, not unlike an ice cream cone. The singularity at the end is the point of source division. Let me explain. The point of I am is the point of source, like a circle equals the void. There is no attention. There is only source, or self. There is no up, down, inside or outside. There's no awareness. There are only self and sleep and bliss. But if you take the square root of source, not dividing it in half, the square root of source, you get the number phi, which is equal to I am. Source, that is, self, becomes aware. In this awakening, self shouts, I am, and bursts into existence. Although self is aware, there is still not perspective. The function must be run to completion. The most difficult action in creation now has to occur. Self has to free itself from the bounds of its source. It must somehow divide the source circle and allow the function to happen. But this is not a division like a cell divides in two. The process is actually the square root of source. In fact, all of us times each other are source. We cannot be separated from the equation. It is in us, and we are in it. The square root is released into the universe as two soul mates. The application of intention to phi is the creative force. There is now perspective, because in this square root function, source becomes two. Now there is distance, and there is some other intelligence with whom to share existence. This other entity is identical in every way to the original, except that one is female and one is male. One is yin and one is yang. When they swirl around each other, creation continues to happen. One can never exist without the other, and would simply collapse into source again without perspective and lost in the bliss of the void. This love and mating is so powerful that it is the creative force for the entire universe. Source is God, and God is you. That is to say, when the two parts are multiplied together, aware and loving and in love, creation occurs. The variety of life in the sea, the sky, and the very energy in the universe itself are the result of the creative force of all the source intelligences in the universe agreeing to create. When the two parts become separated by space and time, they experience mortality separately, growing and aching for one another. This is also a part of the growth process. One would think that gods know everything, are omnipresent, but intimate knowledge of the third dimension is so powerful and so integral to the love that they keep coming back over and over again to either gain it for themselves or act as a teacher and mentor to others so they experience this joy at least once in their existence. You know who you are. If you feel a little out of place in this world, perhaps with an acute sensitivity for man's inhumanity, then it's possible you are from this clan of newcomers to the earth. These gods are ever seeking one another throughout the universe, being born and expiring over and over again on one world and then another. When they find one another, and the recognition can take place over great distances and in a flashing appearance, the joy is so powerful that every sentient being in the universe and throughout all dimensions rejoices. If you have felt that feeling, it is quite amazing. If you haven't, watch for it. And when you begin to increase your circle of acquaintances, you'll see it. They're out there, and they are looking for you, too. Ascended masters from all dimensions may come to herald the event, and it is a sight to behold. The presence of these ascended masters has been photographed. Orbs can be photographed with digital or film-like cameras, with or without a flash. These also can be observed with the naked eye, but the vibrational level of the observer must be raised to be able to detect the energy. Like ultraviolet radiation, it is just out of the frequency band for the human cells in the eye. With proper preparation, the cells can become sensitive to this radiation and see them appear. Orbs appear in all sizes and colors. The designs in them are not unlike the mandalas created by Tibetan monks in sand or with their artwork. The more high resolution the camera, the easier it is to see the designs inside the orb. I have observed veritable rivers of orbs flowing through crowds of people when viewing the surroundings through infrared goggles while the area is being flooded with infrared light. Orbs are attracted to love. Numerous experiments conducted by the author have proven that orbs can be nowhere in sight after numerous camera shots. However, upon applying a loving intention to the area, subsequent shots reveal orbs appearing in large numbers. In one such experiment, a high-resolution digital camera was set on a tripod at night in the center of a large group of observers. The reason this experiment is inserted at this point is because the feeling of remembrance and recognition is one that should be felt and should be used as a guide as we proceed with this training. The camera was set to take a picture every 10 seconds for 1 minute, 6 shots in total. The author's friend, Michal Ledwith, author of The Orb Project, stood in an echinacea field in the dark of night with his hands down at his sides while maintaining a blank and neutral mind. The first flash occurred. He then raised his arms above his head as if beholding the stars overhead and began to extend his love into the area. He was almost in an act of blessing. The second flash occurred. He continued to extend his intention for loving the people watching him in a large circle around him, as well as the space around him. The third and fourth flashes occurred. Then he lowered his hands and began to return his mind to the neutral and blank state with which he began. The fifth and sixth flashes occurred. We then went inside to a meeting hall, and the camera was connected to a computer that was connected to a projector. The images were put on the wall in sequence. In the first picture, Michal was seen alone in the blackness around him. There were no bugs, as it was about 50 degrees Fahrenheit, and there was no breeze of any kind blowing. In the second picture, Michal is observed with his arms above his head, and a white mist is beginning to form around him, as if being conjured between his upraised arms. In the third picture, the mist is so thick that it nearly obscures his face. The appearance of orbs is profound. There are about a dozen of them in blue, red, white, lavender, green, and even pink. In the third picture, the mist is so thick, Michal cannot even be seen from the waist up. There are hundreds of orbs of nearly every color in the rainbow. In the fourth picture, the mist takes on the form of a vortex or a tornado, while the orbs are too numerous to count. Perhaps there are thousands of them. In the fifth and sixth pictures, the mist is dissipating, and the orbs can be seen exiting the area as if cooperating with the demonstration. Now here is the remarkable thing. The camera was a 10-megapixel camera with a large lens and an external flash. The resulting detail of these shots was extremely fine. When these were shown on the wall of the meeting hall, the image was perhaps 16 feet across. One could walk up to the orb displayed on the wall and observe the patterns inside the orbs. There were horses, men with beards sitting in lotus positions, schematics, geometric patterns, and even what looked like complex machines displayed in clear detail in many of the orbs. No two were alike. This was a controlled and objectively observed experiment. The results were irrefutable. The orbs appeared as the result of loving intention, were not a flaw in the camera, nor were they the result of dust or insects in the air. One could only wonder how unaware we normally are of the presence of beings that are drawn to our love. The feelings that were recognized by the observers of this experiment were powerful and wonderful. The reason this is a square root function is simple enough. The circumference of a circle is calculated by using pi, and then multiplying the radius of that circle by itself. The circle gets larger as the square of its radius multiplied by pi. This becomes even more fantastic as one realizes that the future, emanating from this source point forward, is shaped like a cone and not a circle. The volume of the cone represents the potential of all potentialities. The formula is volume is equal to pi times the diameter squared times the height of the cone divided by 12. This is the result of a two-dimensional circle moving through space with an increasing diameter. Each moment in time is a circle, but the function fits so closely together in such an immediate sequence that it forms a cone. The sides of the cone should be straight, but they rarely are because of future threads. What's a future thread? I'm glad you asked. We're going to cover that in better detail when we discuss dreams, but here is the idea. When we put a dream out there in the future, we often tend to make a but-first list. I don't mean you walk backwards. I mean we have a habit of planning how we are going to get there by saying, but first I have to do this, and first I have to do that. We tell the universe how we are going to get there. Unfortunately, that thread of events rarely resonates with the available energy in the universe, and so the dream is rarely realized. What happens to the perfect cone is it becomes rather shaped a little like a tornado, twisting and writhing into the future with power and glory, yet always increasing in radius. The entire structure of one's time is always changing, and thus difficult to compute. But one can see from the parabolic cone in the picture in the book that each segment is observable. There is a change that occurs to the sides of the cone. in this type of cone, volume is equal to pi times the diameter squared times the height, but this time divided by 8. Do you see what happened to the formula? The denominator changed. We changed it by reducing the possibilities, the potentials of the universe. We may squeeze it down with our own ego to a single line of possibility by forcing the universe into a process it cannot support, thus blocking the very abundance the universe has in store for us. As the universe is traced back to the presenter's event horizon, the path narrows to the region around the thread. As the thread is observed, the other dimensions around that thread are affected as well. There are fields within fields and nuances of fact and metaphysics that can be observed and therefore changed by the human being. Segments of the tornado or cone can be observed by themselves, which can make working the process more simple. Normally, review of one's past is not done back to the moment of birth. There's a membrane, a veil, and there are disconnects between the very young being and the being that is self-aware. I call this process stepping in. A very old being who has been born into a new body has nothing in common with the little child. He or she wants to be adult and think adult and get back to whatever what was left in the life before. But the very young child body often does not want to cooperate. Beethoven and Liszt resumed playing the piano at prodigal ages. Artists draw, mathematicians calculate, and other amazing gifts burst through tiny bodies to make great contributions. But make no mistake here, the very passionate being will feign to step into a small body and be a child. The typical age is around 9 years of age when the light goes on. Sometimes the connection is lost through a variety of conditions, which may or may not be the choice of the child. But the general rule is that the more that must be overcome in order to come of age, the greater the potential of accomplishment the being may realize. No true leader was ever born into the lap of luxury. There is no advantage of beauty, strength, or even intelligence. I know failures with each and all of these traits. There is only one thing that yields a legacy. That one thing is determination. You don't need eyesight, legs, or even the ability to speak to become greater than your imagination. Determine to work this formula and you cannot fail. The entire universe will shake at your intention and spontaneously yield forth its abundance if you learn these points and apply what I am about to tell you. The potential of all potentialities can be considered in small sections. We select sections of time to examine. This mathematically fits the past review process better than an entire cone formula. The thing to keep in mind is the relationship of events and how the future possibilities expand in all directions as the square of the distance. The values in the equation are not necessary. The relationship between the different values is important. This structure is mathematically called a frustum. Volume is equal to pi times the height divided by 12 times d squared plus db plus b squared. This differential equation forms a shape looks like a cone that's cut off at the middle. Inside this multi-dimensional space, one has a tendency to force threads or pathways of intention into the future. Although represented by mathematical functions on strings, there are very real aspects of past threads that make up the fabric of past life, and thus of space-time itself. The attention of a being on the past will entwine with the attention of other beings that may have been part of that experience. Even plants and microorganisms are eventually affected by the observation of a being placed upon a past thread. These past threads are real, yet each time they are observed, they are changed. Even random number generators, also called RNGs, can be altered in the past by the observation of a human being. Traveling here without a guide can be done, but in order to safely and expeditiously clear an error in a past thread, it is recommended that a guide be utilized for the first few times. I recommend finding a clearing practitioner if you are suffering from life overwhelm or the loss of some kind that brings you great sadness or weakness. Other than this, you can do it by yourself and realize awesome results. One of the key reasons for effectively observing the past is to correct the position of the present and create a pathway to the future from here. But let's save the future pathway process for later. For now, just learn the ability to observe the past and effect constructive changes in the now. The past cone is a three-dimensional cone that contains all the energy memories of all the actions, inactions, and interactions between them and everything else in the universe as it pertains to self. Now, the past is not a straight line, but rather a narrow tube. It has a small range of possibilities for change, but there are still observations that can be made and lessons learned. The immediate future is a narrower cone because of the choices we have made up to this point. You may have chosen not to stay in school. You may have gotten married. You may have chosen not to save money or invest wisely. The slightly more distant future is wide open to the potential of all potentialities. That is, unless we force one of the future threads into the future by dictating how dreams will come to fruition. I don't know is an acceptable answer when it comes to knowing how the abundance will occur. You'll know it when it occurs. Believe me, the threads stretch toward you from the future, and they are multi-dimensional. The shape looks a little bit like a funnel, with a long narrow tube, a slightly expanding cone, and then the very large mouth of the funnel. So this is the general shape, the past being the small part of the funnel, the immediate future being the gentle beginning slope of the funnel, and the distant future as the wide open mouth of the funnel. Consider a single filament fiber under a microscope. It's sort of like a one photon thick wire. Even though the filament is exceedingly small, there is girth to the filament. That is to say, there is a cross section, no matter how small it may be. This thread will be multidimensional, having a wealth of energy and a specific sound that you are going to be trained to listen for. Now, there are two directions of consideration around each of these filaments in the fabric, and two directions for flow, forward and reverse. There is a counterclockwise and a clockwise direction. Each of these directions will have certain energy. Those energies are equal and opposite because the thread is stable and contains all the information you need to hold your weight while it supports you. When they are combined exactly out of phase, the result is zero. Therefore, only one direction can be considered at once. In other words, you have to make a choice when the moment comes to you. When the Merkaba is rotated with a net counterclockwise energy, there is a certain consideration and life is given to everything. When it is rotated with a net clockwise energy, there is another consideration, and everything planned or unplanned dies. This is why we are taught to rotate one complete star tetrahedron counterclockwise at a speed ratio of 34 and one complete star tetrahedron clockwise at a speed ratio of 21. These are not actual revolutions, but rather form a ratio of 34 to 21. And these are both numbers in the Fibonacci sequence that we will discuss a little further in the book. If we divide 34 by 21, we almost get a perfect golden mean at 1.619. The difference between the two numbers is a 13 counterclockwise motion of the entire Merkaba, which produces life. Each human being has three complete Merkaba fields. The primary one is motionless. It is oriented according to the predominant sex of the being. If the female energy is the predominant energy of the being, then the upper tetrahedron, called the sky tetrahedron, has the flat surface facing forward. If the predominant energy of the being is male, then the flat surface faces rearward. This orientation applies to the sexual orientation of the being, no matter what the biological sex of the person might be. This energy field is normally symmetrical. It may be distorted if the being at some point in his or her life suffered emotional or physical trauma and never was cleared of that wound. Beings suffering from soul wounds or who are taking hallucinogenic drugs may not be able to maintain a symmetrical Merkaba field. Keep in mind that this is only the physical portion of the three Merkaba fields that exist around the life energy axis of each human being. The other two star tetrahedron fields are identical in size and shape, but there is a distinct difference. They rotate. All three star tetrahedrons are superimposed upon the other with precisely the same axis. Under normal circumstances, the female star tetrahedron field rotates counterclockwise, and the male star tetrahedron rotates clockwise. Remember, they cannot rotate at the same speeds in opposite directions. If this were to happen, the result would be zero. It is for this reason that they rotate in that specific Fibonacci ratio. Now, here is the most important mathematical discovery with relation to the law of attraction and how to make it give forth its abundance. Subtitle: The Phoenix Sequence. What you are about to learn is the most important key to unlocking the secret of the law of attraction. It utilizes a mathematical process of increase that is found in nature, by which order arises out of chaos. The sequence was discovered by an Italian mathematician named Leonardo Pisano, whose nickname was Fibonacci. While I was modifying one of my previous lesson plans for my algebra students at the college, I started playing with the sequence in my calculator. I wanted to start somewhere other than zero, but I wanted to follow the same process. I entered two random numbers and added them together and started from there. After only 8 iterations, the last two numbers, divided one into the other, achieved the golden proportion of 1.618 to 1. This was a stunning discovery. I went at it for hours, using non-integers, fractions, and even imaginary numbers. It worked every time. I proved that any values, even energy of intention, increased in this way, would achieve the golden proportion and be supported by the resonance rules of the universe. Fibonacci was a brilliant mathematician who rediscovered the progression of growth in nature. We say rediscovered because these growth progressions have been known for millions of years by all creators in the universe. Honeycombs, sunflowers, pine cones, and even the ratio of the human face, length to width, as well as the hands to the arms, and many other ratios, are the result of this sequence of numbering. It is very simple. The number sequence normally starts with zero, as does all creation. There are circumstances where Fibonacci relationships can arise out of other progressions, which we'll explain in a moment. Here's a normal consideration for the first 13 Fibonacci numbers. You start with 0. Add 1. 1 plus 0 is 1. Then add the next two numbers together. 1 plus 1 equals 2. Then the next two. 1 plus 2 equals 3, and so forth, until you get to 55 plus 89 equals 144. Notice that the first two numbers are added together to get the third, and so forth along the number line. There is something even more amazing about these numbers. When the progression reaches the numbers 34 and 55, the following consecutive numbers form a very close proximity to the golden mean of 1.618 when divided into one another. This is where the curve goes away, and the plotted line becomes rather straight at a very specific slope of 1.618. In other words, the standard deviation from the plotted line becomes very small, and the line doesn't change slope except in the fourth decimal place. In other words, when the number 55 is divided by 34, the result rounds to 1.619. This is extremely important when considering creation. No religion or philosophy can take a single decimal point away from the mathematical truism of sequential creation. Sunflowers, honeycombs, pine cones, bacteria, the human face, the human body, and in fact the progression of molecular weights through the periodic table all obey this natural progression. The golden mean is the ratio by which chaos becomes order. Out of the quantum foam that makes up space-time, and perhaps the consciousness soup that makes up dark matter and dark energy, order can arise without the addition of additional intelligent action by any outside influence. It might be called spontaneous generation, except that the mathematical relationship may actually be the intelligent influence from consciousness itself. Someone asked me what the odds were that our universe turned out to be carbon-based. I told them, 1. That's right. You see, the only set of elements that can form is that supported by the mathematical ratio of the golden mean. Anything in between or outside that ratio cannot be supported by the universe. Therefore, all universes are carbon-based. But we cannot always start at 0. Fibonacci had the right process, but the understanding of what could be realized with this process has nothing to do with the number 0. Do we have to go all the way back to the beginning to find these ratios? No. Here is the breakthrough discovery that changed everything for me and opens the curtain of creation for each of you. Any two numbers can be utilized in a Fibonacci process, which we will now call the Phoenix sequence, as the power of this creation ratio arises out of the chaos of numbers. Now, you can trust me on this, or you can try it yourself. I entered fractions, irrational numbers, and imaginary numbers, and the Phoenix sequence works every time. The most remarkable discovery was that even if quanta of energy were added together, the result was the same. This truly was the key to making manifestation, intention, and the law of attraction work by design. Let's take any two numbers, like 75 and 216. These two numbers are far apart. One is odd and one is even. They are not factors of one another. Yet, if we add the two numbers together and then continue in a Fibonacci pattern for 8 more iterations, the result will be the golden mean. This is called the Phoenix sequence. 75 plus 216 is equal to 291. 216 plus 291 equals 507. 291 plus 507 equals 798. You get the picture. Now, when you get to the eighth iteration, it is 3,408 plus 5,511 equals 8,919. Let's take the last two numbers, 8,919, and divide it by 5,511. The result, 1.618. This is the golden mean. This is phi, the original value realized when source took the square root of itself to become each of you. Awesome. And it will work with any two numbers, whether they are whole or not, with very little deviation from the plotted line. The slope is always the golden mean, plus or minus a very small deviation. We will show you this means that any starting point is suitable. Now would be excellent. Add to this point the energy of a dream, as we will show you later in the book. Like striking a bell with a hammer, the ring will go out into the universe, and whatever will constructively resonate with that sound always will happen in the golden ratio. The sound that returns to you will be the sound given off by that which resonated with the ring. In other words, the starting point plus the ring produced a third energy, the first wave of resonance. When that wave arrives, you must precisely and exactly add another dose of energy. It can be in the form of work, a phone call, an email, or other type of action. Hence, you have added the next iteration of energy to the dream. Doing so with the right thing and the right intensity is the key to success. The ability to listen to that return of the wave so that the exact timing of the next energy input can be achieved is the key to making dreams come true. It is the key to abundance. The power behind this discovery is that two seemingly unrelated life experiences can be arranged into a string of events that fits the ratio by which the universe expands in order. The secret is unlocked with this process followed for eight iterations or steps. I interviewed three professional golfers for this book. I asked them how many times they tried to get on the pro tour before they were successful. 8. I asked an investor how many times he invested in various companies before he made a large return on his investment. 8. I asked real estate agents how many closings they had before they really got the swing of it and started making money consistently, almost as though it took half the effort to get the same results. 8. In fact, consistent with the Phoenix sequence, I discovered that every failure I interviewed only attempted to accomplish their dream 2 or 3 times before quitting. We have shown you that if you go back to the past and add any two events on your path, no matter how distant in time, within 8 additive motions, the golden mean can be achieved. They must, however, be sequential. This means one event must be the driver or the opportunity to the next event. When a door closes, a window opens. You have to be able to listen and hear when the window opens and have the determination to jump through it when it does. This is equally functional with future movements. This is the process of perfect creation. Rotating the Merkaba fields in ratios of the golden mean with the female rotation as the higher of the two numbers will produce the perfect manifestation field for human beings. The reason the Merkaba is important is to help your life energy to flow and to stay focused. The place to focus your energy is the heart. I'll explain more on this a little further in the book. Subtitle: The Dream Process. Most people have dreams, if you don't have one, it's probably because you forgot the one you had when you were a child. We often make plans to accomplish the dream, but most of the time it does not manifest. The Phoenix sequence does not need to start at zero. It can start anywhere. And, as we have now proven, once you start adding events to the sequence, within 8 iterations, the process is obeying the golden mean, more likely in harmony with the universe. Most people don't achieve their dreams because the door closes in front of them. If it's a good dream, another door often opens, and sometimes people keep walking for about 3 more doors. Then they quit. The universe will resonate with your intention, no matter what. But if you quit before 8 iterations, you will not succeed, because the golden mean has not been realized. Does this mean you must experience 7 failures before you experience a success? Possibly, but not likely. The joy you will feel because you are walking your dream process will be so great that you will already feel successful. In fact, finishing isn't the goal of a proper dream anyway. Dreams should be all about doing and being rather than having. I am always amazed at how many people dream of having things rather than being something or processing something. Many times when I ask people about their dream, they say they want $1 million. Pressing further, I ask why they want $1 million. They usually say something like they want to travel or be able to help others with their money. So the real dream is not the money, not really. It is usually the things the money can buy, or the fun that can be had at spending it. That is the real dream. Still, it is usually shallow and never brings joy. We realize that dream building on things only gets us to a place where we are ready to die. In other words, when you get that red sports car you are dreaming about, is your life complete? Are you ready to die? Getting things or having things is a result of being and doing. Being is the process I am trying to accomplish with sending this book back to you with all the knowledge of the ancients tied together with the learning of the end times. Being is the perfect present state of an individual consciousness. I feel that with the access to knowledge that you have in your time and the addition of the messages left by the ancients, though some may be veiled in symbols designed to convey the truth without costing them their lives, you would have all the tools you need to manifest proper and useful dreams. Dreams of being will naturally lead to the action of doing. Doing is the actual energy applied to complete the state of being. When we bring our dream of being into the world of work, in the three-dimensional world, the doing begins. This doing is the value of immortal life. It is the true reason why we come to this dimension to do work. And contrary to many teachings, this earth is one of the best places in the universe to have immortal life. Look at who has come here to experience immortal life. Adam, Gandhi, Moses, and even Jesus came here to experience immortal life. Don't feel like this is such a bad place. The truth is that when someone asks you where heaven is, you need only say, right here. By the same token, when someone asks you where hell is, you need only say, right here. What I am trying to teach you is that you and only you can make this world a heaven or a hell. It can happen within the walls of your own home, or even within the walls of your own cells. As I mentioned earlier, the difference between an optimist and a pessimist is that the optimist believes we live in the best of all possible worlds, while the pessimist fears that's true. Same world, different realities. So before you finish this book, you should know that dreaming is about process and not about solids. Working toward your dream is the goal. That is to say, serving as a school teacher is a good dream because it is about the process of teaching. Dreaming of a red sports car is not a good dream because it is focusing on a solid that acts just like the sandcastle, ready to be jumped on or washed away in the sea. The thing to remember is to dream. As a child, you had them. As a rational grown-up, you have been indoctrinated to believe in three-dimensional treasures as the goals of life. Be like the child again, and dream of the sandcastle. Like the child building the sandcastle, the process of forming the castle with one's own hands is the goal, not finishing the castle. Owning a fine home or having $1 million in the bank is not a proper dream. Being a teacher or an engineer are suitable process type dreams. The main idea to remember here is don't quit after 2 or 3 failures. Remember that the universe will flow things to you according to your intentions, and your response to that flow must reach 8 iterations before the golden mean can be realized. Notice that there exists a pathway around the circumference of each of these photon-thin filaments we called threads. Keep in mind that a photon is considered a massless particle. We are only displaying the particle here so you can better imagine it with your three-dimensional brain. Just because it's massless does not mean it does not exist. If you want to see if they exist for yourself, just turn on a flashlight and observe the light beam. For a simple understanding, let's assume an irreducible complexity here. This light is formed by the photons generated when the electrons move from one energy state to another around a molecule. Electrical current provided by the battery excites the electrons to a higher state. When the electron jumps between energy states, a photon at a frequency exactly matching that difference radiates out from that molecule. All frequencies in the visible and non-visible range obey this principle. So, when we say that a photon moves through time, it forms a thread through the time cone that becomes part of the fabric. As human beings, we can and do emit billions of these photons each and every moment. When these photons move through space and time, they exhibit the properties of a wave. When we stop to see their spin, they behave as particles. This wave-particle duality has been the bane of physics for more than a century. Each photon has a spin that is either positive or negative. For our purposes, we want you to think of it as clockwise or counterclockwise. The spin of this particle can be reversed electromagnetically. One can either be done with sophisticated instruments or with human intention. Recall the entangled particles we discussed earlier. These particles are created by an individual. They might be entangled with other human beings or with the beings that are not human. That means that when the spin is altered by you, the particle in the other being's time cone changes spin instantaneously. If the spin on the distant particle is altered by an energy in that environment, the spin of the matching particle in your time cone changes as well. Without any effort on your own, the energy condition has moved. An event or an act in your past can change through the intention of another being. You can change the past of another being by your intention as well. This is conditional upon the two particles being entangled. This normally means that two of you had some kind of relationship or shared experience. The limits on this activity are infinite. That is to say, the past can be and is constantly improved and altered by the intention of the participants. In physics, giant gravitons are in large numbers as dielectric gravitational waves form fuzzy cylinders that mathematically behave in exactly the same manner. Each thread is actually a pathway formed by the passing of the particle through time. Now, we can get a picture of how complex the relationship between a human being and the universe of other sentient beings can be. Even more clearly, we can see the effect of intention upon the universe. So, let's do this with purpose.